I missed that.
The Pasuk in Parshas Tetzav describes the tzitz, which was a plate of gold, and the Pasuk says that it was Pituchei Chaisam Kodesh Lashem. The Gemara brings down a brisa, the Gemara in Sukkah and Dachei brings down a brisa where it describes it in more detail. It says that it was a plate of gold that was two finger widths wide and it went from ear to ear. And it was Kosov Alav Kodesh Lashem. But then it says, but it didn't say it the way you think. Because it said that it says the Yud Kei Lamala and the Kodesh Lamed Lamata. Because Hashem's name is one of the two words in the sentence. And if you'd write it straight, if you'd write it in order, then Hashem's name would be on the bottom line, and the other word would be sitting on top of it. That's not a derech eretz sticker way to present Hashem's name. So you want Hashem's name sitting on top and the other one on bottom. So the way the Gemara describes it is Yud Kei Lamala and Kodesh Lamed Lamata. But then the Brisa continues. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, Omer. Rabbi Yosi says, I saw it in Rome, and it was Kosov Alav Kodesh Lashem B'Shita Achas. And it was written straight in one line. He says that he saw it in Rome. He was apparently when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed and the Romans captured the Beis Hamikdash and the treasures of the Beis Hamikdash, so one of the things that they captured was the tzitz, and they brought it back to Rome with them. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, who lived a couple of days after the Churban, had some business in Rome, and he got some tour of a museum there, and he saw the tzitz, and he came back and told the other Tanayim in Eretz Yisrael what it looked like. Wow. So now you have, if you're a Pesach, if you imagine you're learning this Gemara not as a Rashi commentary, but let's say as a Rambam, who's a Pesach. So what do you do? Now this is a halacha shaila. How do you make the tzitz? What do you do with this Gemara? On the one hand, generally, if you have a brisa where it's the first opinion is written anonymously, so we usually consider that to be the chachamim, and the second opinion is written with a name, so that's an individual. It means that this individual had a different opinion than all the other chachamim in the Beis Hamedrash. So we have a usual rule of yachav rabim halacha karabim. So if we have the chachamim holding that Kodesh Hashem was written on two lines, and Rabbi Elazar B'Yosi holds that it was written on one line, so we say yachav rabim halacha karabim, and we should paskin that when you make a tzitz, it's halacha lamaisa. Mehiri Yibana Beis Hamikdash, we have to make a tzitz. So we should paskin that when you make the tzitz, it should be written on two lines. But on the other hand, you know, that's all well and good when there's a machlekes about how to interpret something. But over here, they were thinking about how to interpret the meaning of that. And he was saying, I saw it. I saw it with my eyes. So what are you going to do? He was a liar? Or Blazer wasn't a liar. He says he went to the museum and he saw what the tzitz looked like. So how could you pass it against him? On the other hand, Yachav Rav HaLachav Rav, you know, goes against the Klali Hayra. So the Rambam actually came up.
Where's the Gemara?
This is in Sukkah Daf Hei, and it's also in Shabbos Daf Samach Gimel. Two places. So the Rambam came up with a very creative solution to this. The Rambam, he passes the halachas in Hilchas Klei HaMikdash, Perek Tes, that's where he's describing all of the Big Day Kahuna, and he says about the tzitz, that it was written on two lines, Hashem Lamala and Kodesh Lamata, Ve'im Kasvu B'Shita Achas Kasher, but b'di'evit it's kosher on one line, u'pa'amim kasvu b'shita achas. And sometimes they wrote it on one line. Hmm. Meaning, that the first chiddush that's here, or at least to us it's a chiddush, that this was, you know, making Big Di Kahuna, even something like the tzitz, was not a one-time event. Moshe Rabbeinu made the tzitz and then it was passed down through the generations. This was a halacha matter. You had to, the people in charge of the Beis HaMikdash had to constantly see to it that the Big Dik Kahuna were up to date and things got worse. Okay, you know, some of the Begadim were more to the size of the person, so you had to make it for each Kohen Gadol according to his size. I don't know how much variation there was in the tzitz, says me, oizen le'oizen. Maybe in that also there were different sizes, but there was also wear and tear. You wear something for a long time, even if it's not fabric, right? This is the tas shel zav. Even if it's jewelry, nothing lasts forever. So there was maintenance and things had to be replaced sometimes. So they made tzitzes every now and then. I don't know how often, but every now and then they made a tzitz. And the Rambam says, and sometimes there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. But it's not ma'akev. If you really, you know, the people that really knew what they were doing and did it right, they did it on two lines. But sometimes, you know, you hired a contractor and he didn't do it quite right, and but then it was already done. So, okay. So, you know, maybe especially in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, we know that the people in charge were not always the biggest Tamidei Chachamim. They weren't always so erlich, right? The Gemara just is very critical of the people who were running the Beis Hamikdash in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash. So, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yaisi saw, he went to a museum. You can't dispute that he saw what he saw. He saw a tzitz that was written Kodesh Hashem on one line, but maybe that was a lousy tzitz. It's kosher. It's kosher, but the Eved, but there's a right way and a wrong way, and
when
maybe
would he have seen it? After the Chorban?
After the Chorban. Okay. He was a son of Rabbi Yaisi. Rabbi Yaisi was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva saw the Shualim coming out of the Kodesh Kodeshim. Rabbi Akiva was alive at the time of the Chorban, younger, but when he was the leader of the generation, was already after the Chorban. And Rabbi Yaisi is his Talmud, and the Rabbi Elazar was the son of his Talmud. So it's a couple of days after the Chorban.
That's like
Eid
Echad?
He
was only one person?
No, it's not, you know. I mean, yeah, you know, I guess it allows you to say maybe he was lying, but we don't think he was likely
maybe
to be lying, you know. Yeah, maybe.
Sorry, Mara also, you have a machlekes like that.
Right.
I sat on his camera.
Right. There is such a Gemara in Sanhedrin also about Spencer and Mara and about Yoni Dachas, right. And I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Remember the third part of that Gemara.
Yeah.
Over there, it's much more mustaber to interpret it. Alderich Jewish. I don't remember now. I saw not long ago somebody who said a pshat in that Gemara, but that it didn't mean you can't take it literally because it's not mustaber a few things in that Gemara that lend itself more to a figurative interpretation. Over here, it's hard to do this. Really, halacha deka Gemara. And he says, Anira Isi Veroimi, I saw it in Rome. So Rome says, yeah, okay, that means that there's two ways to make it, and one is better than the other. And the right way to make it is in Shnei Shitim. Now, in this Rambam, another interesting thing. The Rambam, let me go back to the Gemara in Sukkah. In both places where the Gemara appears, in Sukkah and also in Shabbos, Tosfos has a discussion. It says that it was written, the Gemara says that it was written in a funny way. The Pasuk is Kodesh Lashem. The Pasuk says that it was written on the Tzitz, Kodesh Lashem. But in the Gemara it says that it was Yud Kei Lamala, the Kodesh Lamed Lamata, which means that it wasn't really written in order. Now, the idea was that you don't want anything on top of Hashem's name. Hashem's name should be on the top. It shouldn't be under something else. Okay. But it says that to interpret it literally, that it said Hashem on top and then Kodesh Lamed Lamata, Taisa says it's not Mestaber because Ein Zeh Derech Kriyasai. Like, how are you supposed to read that? That just doesn't read right. So Taisa has an idea, and this truth is there's two versions of this idea. The way that two roots of Mepharim Rishonim, they're really the same basic teretz, but there's two nuschos of how it's said. The way that Taisa says it, is that when it says that the Shem Hashem was Lamala, that means it was on the top line, but it was shifted over to the left of the top. It was at the end of the top line. And the Kodesh Lamed, which was, the Gemara says, on the bottom line, but it was shifted over to the right. So it was all the way at the beginning of the bottom line. So that if you were reading from right to left, you'll read that Kodesh Lashem. But because if you start from the right side, the Kodesh Lamed is written on the right side and Hashem is on the left side. So there's still, you have the benefit that there's nothing on top of Hashem's name. Hashem's name is on the top line, but the Kodesh Lamed is written on the right. There's another Nusach, which is brought down in some Rishonim of Hashem, Rabbeinu Tam, and in some Rishonim of Hashem, the Ravid, that makes it actually the opposite way around. They're not satisfied with that because when you're reading a book or when you're reading anything, you go from the top line to the next, to the second line, to the third line. You start on the top line, so it's still not going to read right. If Hashem was on the top line, so it still says Hashem Kodesh La. So they do it the other way around. It said Kodesh Lamed on the top line, but only at the end of the line, and then it said Hashem's name at the beginning of the second line. Then it reads right. Then it reads Kodesh Lashem, I think Gemara says that Hashem's name was Lamala. Lamala means at the beginning of the line. It doesn't mean higher on the page, but it means the beginning of the line.
Nothing on top.
Right, and there's nothing above it, right? You also you have that benefit. There's nothing above it. So you have these two alternatives of how to read the Gemara, not literally, because Taisa says if you read it literally, that it said Hashem on top, and then below the Kodesh Hashem, Kodesh Lamed, so in the Derech Kriyasa, it just doesn't read right. So you make it like that, right? Either like this or like that, but you have to shift it to the right, to the left, so that it reads more properly. Right. Now, Lamaisa, in the Rambam, again, coming back to this Rambam that we said over, the Rambam doesn't say anything like this. The Rambam just brings down, as it's written in the Gemara, he says that the Shem Hashem was Lamala. It said, the way the Rambam puts it, it says Lashem Lamala and Kodesh Lamata. And he doesn't say, and this is to the right and this is to the left, not Tosafot's way, not the Ravid's way. The Mashmos in the Rambam is that he didn't have a problem with it being just one on top of the other and out of order. Lashem Kodesh. So that's, you know, a ha'ara, like what would be his response to Tosafot's question, the Ein Zeh Derech Kriyasai? So we'll leave that ha'ara on hold. There's a third interesting thing in this Rambam. Again, the Rambam was interesting about how he dealt with the issue of one line or two lines, that there was machlekes and it was hard to know which way to pass it, so the Rambam came up with a creative solution for that. Then there's the question of how you put one above the other. Are they straight? Are they shifted to the sides? And the Rambam seems to have them straight. And then there's a third issue where the Rambam has a chiddush. Where did the Lamed go? The way we have the Gemara, the way I said over the Gemara at the beginning, is that it says in the Gemara that it had Yud Kei Lamala, the Kodesh Lamed Lamata. It writes out the Gemara writes out the Lamed, meaning the Kodesh Lamed was Lamata. The Rambam doesn't write it that way. The Rambam says that it said Lashem Lamala and Kodesh Lamata. So the Rambam moved the Lamed. Instead of putting the Lamed with the Kodesh, as a prefix to nothing, he put the Lamed together with the word that it goes with. He put it together with the Shem Hashem. So the Kesef Mishnah says, hey, that's against the Gemara and Sukkah. And then then something funny happens. The Kesef Mishnah says that, okay, it's not like the Gemara and Sukkah, it's like the Gemara and Shabbos. The Gemara, because this price is brought down in both places, and the Gemara and Shabbos has it that way, Ayin Sham. Well, I call this bluff. I was my ayin sham, and it doesn't say it. Right? In Lamaisa, in Shabbos, it says it the same way that it says it in Sukkah. Our girsin, the Gemara in Shabbos, and in the Gemara in Sukkah, is that it says the Lamed together with the Kodesh. But obviously, the Kesef Mishnah had a different girsin in the Gemara in Shabbos. So, okay, the Rambam also obviously had another girsa. I don't know if there's a lumdus behind that machlaikis, but clearly the Rambam's girsa, he saw somewhere that the Lamed went with the Shem Hashem.
But like film, you know, I have a Rashi and every time the ship toots it, you know, we're like this one.
Right. Well, we already mentioned three machlekes, so you're going to be up to eight tzitzes.
Four tzitzes. Yeah.
Very good. So now, it could be that these last two nekudos are related. Let's go back to the previous thing that we were talking about of how did you stack them one above the other. Tosafot says that it can't be that it just put Hashem on top and then the Kodesh Lamed on the bottom. Ein Zeh Derech Kriyasai. So what does Tosafot mean by that? What's Tosafot's kasha on the simple reading? It could be one of two things. You could learn that Tosafot's kasha is that then it doesn't read as Kodesh Lashem. The Pasuk says Kodesh Lashem, and if you put Hashem on top, then nobody's going to read that as Kodesh Lashem. So it goes against the way it's written in the Pasuk. It could be that Tosafot is asking more than that. That it doesn't say anything. If it says Hashem's name on the top and then Kodesh Lamed on the bottom, so what, you're ending your sentence with a prefix? It just doesn't say anything. Ein Zeh Derech Kriyasai means that it just doesn't say anything. Now, maybe the Rambam held that the first kasha, the first way that I explained the kasha, that it doesn't say what it says in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says Kodesh Lashem. And this is the other way around. Maybe that's not shver. You have a Pasuk. Yeah, the Pasuk is the Teresh B'Chsav. If you're going to go Paskining out of Teresh B'Chsav, you get a lot of things wrong. Teresh B'Chsav says that you should write things on your hand. But we don't write it on your hand. So first of all, we write it on a scroll. We put the scroll in a box. We attach the box to a strap. And then after all that is done, we don't even put that on our hand. We put it on the upper arm. So, but okay, that's Teresh Mechsav and Teresh Malpeh. So maybe it's not so rachik that the Teresh Mechsav says Kodesh Lashem, and the Teresh Malpeh said, no, you can't put Hashem underneath. It's Lashem Kodesh. So we don't write Kodesh Lashem. The fact that when you write Lashem on top and then afterwards Kodesh, it doesn't say Kodesh Lashem, that's not shver. If that's the way Chazal told us to say it. So this is a Teresh Malpeh adjusting what it sounds like from Teresh Mechsav. That's b'chlal not shver. The only shverkeit was, the kash of Ein Zederech Kriyasa is, how could you end the sentence with a prefix? Lashem, Hashem, Kodesh, Lamed, that's unacceptable. How could it end with a Lamed? But then the Rambam, who didn't have the Lamed on the bottom line, the Rambam had the Lamed together with the Shem Hashem. He didn't have the Lamed with the Kodesh, he had the Lamed with the Hashem. So then maybe nothing was shver. So the Rambam could be had no problem with having it Hashem on top and Kodesh underneath. He doesn't bring down that one was shifted over to the right and one was shifted over to the left, because maybe you only need that if you have the Lamed at the end. But if you have the Lamed with Lashem, then it's okay to have the words in reverse order. That Lashem Kodesh, that just means that the Teresh Malpeh told us that we should reverse the order of the words from the way that's written in the Pasuk. So I think that might be a nice pshat on the Rambam. The only thing is, if we're saying that it wasn't just the din that the Shem Hashem should be written above, but that the Teresh Malpeh told us it's a different message. We're not writing Kodesh Lashem. We're writing Lashem Kodesh. So remember, the Rambam said that sometimes they wrote it on two lines and sometimes they wrote it on one line. How did it go when they wrote it on one line? I think according to this pshat, that they mean to be writing Lashem Kodesh, so then even when they write it on one line, it should also be Lashem Kodesh. Now, in our Gemara, it says that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi said, I was in Rome and I saw it was written on one line, Kodesh Lashem. But when the Rambam brings it down and he says, Pamim, that they wrote it on one line, he doesn't say Kodesh Lashem. Those words you don't have in the Rambam. It should come out Lefi Zeh, right? If we're saying that, according to the Rambam, it's not Shver that it was backwards because, yeah, the message was changed. The sentence is Lashem Kodesh. So then, even if they wrote it on one line, they should also write Lashem Kodesh. If really the message is Kodesh Lashem, just you don't want anything on top of Hashem, so you write the Hashem on top, then you're left with the kasha of Ein Zederech Kriyasa. How do you read that as Kodesh Lashem if the Lashem is on top? So again, we want to be miyashe, the enechanami, we're changing the message. Yeah, we're changing it. Teresh Malpeh has a lot of change, the mashmos of Teresh Malpeh. But then it should make an afkamina that even when it was written on one line, it should also be Lashem Kodesh, which, again, in the Gemara, it's before it's not like that. In our gears of the Gemara, the Rambam, it doesn't say, but it doesn't say one way or the other. It will be a chiddush that will come out through the Rambam. I did see that the Ritva, he brings, I don't know where he has the Lamed, but he brings down that Taisus was bothered. How could you have the Shem on top and the Kodesh underneath? It doesn't read right. And he says, his answer is, who cares if it doesn't read right? It wasn't here for anyone to read. This wasn't for people to read. This was just for the tzitz itself. The purpose was that the tzitz should say it. And people don't have to come and read it. And he says that there's a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that the idea is that when it was written with the Shem Hashem above and the Kodesh below, so it presented a picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Yoshev al Kasadra Shalai. Kasadra, English speakers will recognize from the word cathedral, which really comes from a word that means a seat, a throne. And so it's supposed to depict HaKadosh Baruch Hu sitting in his throne. So the Kodesh, or the Kodesh Lamed, I'm not sure which gears of the Ritva had, is forming the throne, and then the Shem Havaya on top of that. And nobody's going to read that and read the Kodesh Lashem, because I don't care. That nobody will tell what it says. But it's a very Bakovetic picture, that it's Hashem Yeshev Bekasadra Shalai. So therefore he's not bothered. Okay. So there's three question marks about how this was written. Two lines, one line. Again, that's Machalik Tanoim, but unclear about how to paskin. One word above the other, or right side and left side. It's Machalik Rishonim. and where the Lamed went. Was the Lamed with the Shem Hashem, or was it with the Kiddush? That's the third Machalik Tushainim. Okay, now let's put that aside. I come back to the Tosfos on the Gemara. The Gemara had said that the Yud K, the way we have written the Gemara is Yud K, again, I'm saying K, it's written out in the Gemara, Yud, spelled Yud Vav Dalet, and then it says Hey, spelled out Hey Aleph, and the Gemara says that was Lamala, and Kedesh Lamed Lamata. Tosfos asks the Kasha, on the word, the Dibur HaMaaseh of Tosfos is Yud K Lamala, and Tosfos says, did you just say Yud K? Hey, you're not allowed to say that. That's a Hoyg Hashem Ba'isi Aisav. Pronouncing Hashem with the letters of the name, you're not allowed to do that. He asks Akasha on the Gemara that the Gemara says it in a way that you're not allowed to say it. Tosfos refers to the expression Hoyg Hashem Ba'isi Aisav. So let's take a little bit of a step back. Tosfos speaks at some of this. What is the meaning? Where does this come from, this idea of Hoyg Hashem Ba'isi Aisav? So it's a very heavy matter. It comes from the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, discussing who has a share in Olam Haba. And then it says, this part of this mission never makes it into the song. And it says, and then it brings various tanoim that add af this and af that. And one of the tanoim says, I think Abba Shoal says, af ha'hoigya Hashem ba'isi Yisav. Somebody who says the Shem Hashem with its letters is Einli Chilak Olam Haba. So what does that mean? There's no Rashi on that Mishnah. I mean, there's no Rashi on those words of the Mishnah. But those words appear, as far as I know, only in one other place in Shas. I mean, there's one other Gemara about Hayah Hashem Yitzyayitzav, and it's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, talking about Rav Chanina ben Tradyon. Rav Chanina ben Tradyon was one of the Asara Arugei Malchus. Ironically, I think a couple of weeks ago, we talked about a different Gemara when they gave the Asara Arugei Malchus, when we were talking about Smicha 2 weeks ago, two or 3 weeks ago, Parshas Mishpatim, I think. We were talking about Smicha, and the Gemara said that Rav Yehuda ben Bava was Meister Nafshai to give over Smicha, and he was executed for it, so he was killed with 300 spears. So this is another Gemara Be'inyan Asar Arugei Malchus. It's talking about Rav Chanina ben Tradyon, who was caught being Marbitz Torah b'Rabim, and the Gemara says that he was burnt at the stake. And the Gemara tells very dramatically how he was burnt together with the Sefer Torah. And the Talmidim said, "What's going on?" And he said, "I see the letters flying up to Shemayim." And then discussion about making him die faster and making him die slower. Very, very moving and dramatic Gemara. There's one detail in that Gemara that's not as famous as the rest of it, that's not said over so widely. But the Gemara says, what did Rav Chanina ben Tradyon do to deserve this? And we know what he was convicted for. Why the Romans were killing him was because he was Marbitz Torah b'Rabim. But why was Hashem, what was Hashem's cheshbon of why Rav Chanina ben Tradyon should be killed this terrible way? What was he guilty of klapei Shemaya? And the Gemara says because he was hoyga Hashem ba'isi Yisav. To which the Gemara says, "What? Can't be! I mean, that's such a terrible avera. Why are we going to try and do that?" And the Gemara says, "No, he wasn't doing it the usher way. Really, he was doing it just to learn how it goes, and that's allowed. But his fault was that he was doing it too publicly. He should have done it more privately, and he was doing it too publicly. So that's why." So he lost his life for that. But his Avera had something to do with Hoyg Hashem Ba'isi Yisav. Over there, there's a Rashi. Rashi is an Avodah Zarah at the very bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Beis. And Rashi says, what does Hoyg Hashem Ba'isi Yisav mean? It means somebody that abuses the power of the 42-letter name. There's a big, big name, 42 letters long, that there's a Maseira from the Goinim, I don't think the Gemara ever tells us how it goes, but there's Maseira that we have that it's somehow based on the first pasuk of Bereishis, and then various kinds of combinations of, I don't know. So it starts with where it involves the letters of Bereishis. That's six letters, I'm sure he does. So that's called the 42-letter name. And Rashi in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Zayin says that if somebody knows what he's doing with that name, he can make whatever he wants happen. He could change the teva. He could make mifsim, right? Miraculous events with the 42-letter name. But if you abuse that, that's called Hoyga Hashem B'Siyasev. It's not clear from Rashi, you know, what's called, what's legal, what's called abusing, but presumably it sounds like if the koyach is there, so under certain circumstances, the right person with the right kavanas and under the right circumstances, maybe is allowed to use this power. But if you're doing, I think the lashon of Rashi is mashali by chafetz, if somebody's making pranks and tricks on everyone with his 42-letter name, so abusing the power of the Shem HaMeferosh, that's the Hoyga Hashem B'Siyasev. And the Gemara says that was Rav Chanina ben Trazion's Avera, even though the Gemara has been only on a small level. I mean, he was really doing what you are allowed to do, but he wasn't keeping it secret enough. He was doing it too publicly. Mm. Now, this Rashi really ties in with another aspect of Parshas Tetzaveh, this idea that the Shem Hashem has supernatural powers. Where does that come from exactly? That's not mafurish anywhere in the Torah, that the Shem Hashem has supernatural powers. Rashi says that's the meaning of the mission of Hagi Shem B'Siyasev, but there's a Rashi in Parshas Tetzaveh that says that was the Urim V'Tumim. Pazik says that the Chayshen, what we know about the Chayshen is that it was a piece of fabric that had 12 settings, and there were 12 stones that went in it. But the Pazik also says that the fabric was twice as long as it needed to be for the 12 settings, and was folded over. And then the Pazik says, and Moshe Rabbeinu put into the Chayshen the Urim V'Tumim. So Rashi says that means that the fold made like a pocket, and Moshe Rabbeinu put a ksav shem hamafayrush, a piece of, I don't know, paper, parchment, something, that had the shem hamafayrush written on it, and he put it inside, and that was the Urim V'Tumim. Meaning, you know, the Gemara tells us the Urim V'Tumim means that the letters of the Chayshen lit up, or, you know, sort of indicated the answers to the questions, but the koyach that made the letters do that, meaning the stones were natural stones, the letters were engraved in a natural way, but the supernatural process that it got was because there was a ksav shem hamafayrush inside. The Ibn Ezra bring them, this is a very, very controversial discussion here. The Ibn Ezra brings down this Rashi. He says, I know Rashi says that there's a ksav shem hamafayrush that gave the power to the Urim V'Tumim. V'ilu ra'a mashakosav Rav Haigain le'omar kocha. So the Ibn Ezra says that if Rashi knew what Rav Haigain wrote, he wouldn't have said this. Now, I don't know what Rav Haigain wrote. The Ibn Ezra says if Rashi knew what Rav Haigain wrote, he wouldn't have said this. The Ramban has a rebuttal against the Ibn Ezra. First of all, the Ramban says Rashi's pshat is 100% right, and he doubles down. He explains for us what it means. He says that the Kohen would have to be mechavein to the shame. In other words, it wasn't stam a magic thing. You had to really be holding on to madrega. You had to understand how these things work and be mechavein to the koyach of the shame, and then the Urim V'Tumim would work for you. And he says, being mechavein to the shame, he would be mechavein to the shame in one way, that's what would make the letters light up. And then a different kind of kavanah with the shame would be what made him know how to interpret the letters that were lighting up. So right, so all of that was the Kohen Gadol, you know, using the Shem Yosef Hashem to make things happen with the Urim V'Tumim. And then the Ramban even adds that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over these secrets to the Chachmei Yisrael. In other words, this got passed down through the generations. This is what we call, part of what we call Sisrei Torah. The Sisrei Torah, they don't come from the Middle Ages, they come from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Ramban is saying. That one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over, you know, he gave over to, you know, the Torah Shemachsav, Torah Shemal Peh, as we know it, that he gave over to all of Klai Yisrael. But then there were things that he gave over to a select few, and they were passed down from select few to select few through the generations. And those are the Sisrei Torah, and that includes the Koyach of the Shemus of Hashem. That's the Ramban writes all of that in his, here in Parashas Tetzav, when he's talking about the Urim V'Tumim. And then he ends off, And that which the Ibn Ezra said, that if only we knew what Rav Haigoin said, that would have silenced us. He said, I saw the letter of Rav Haigoin, and I don't think that the Ibn Ezra understood it. That's what he says. So Rav Haigoin apparently wrote something about Shemos, which there's some debate about whether it meant to be dismissing their supernatural powers or it didn't mean to be dismissing their supernatural powers. The Ibn Ezra thought that it did, and the Ramban thinks that it doesn't. But at any rate, the Ramban and Rashi clearly are comfortable with the idea of the Shem Hashem having supernatural powers. And they say that's what was going on in the Urim V'Tumim. Coming back, and again, the Ibn Ezra says no. The Rambam doesn't write anywhere, as far as I know, one way or the other, or this question of whether Shem Hashem could have supernatural powers. But when it comes to the question of what was the Urim V'Tumim, the Rambam never says a thing about the Ksav Shema Mefayrish. And there is some discussion. A number of Achrayim say that what it seems from putting together a few places in the Rambam, what it sounds like is that according to the Rambam, it was just the stones with the names that were engraved on and the names of the shards that were engraved on, and that was the Urim V'Tumim. There was no additional thing that was put there, the Urim V'Tumim. The stones worked. There was this nace that happened with the stones. You know, that was the Urim V'Tumim. But there's nothing about Ksav Shema Mefayrish.
We have it also, didn't Moshe kill?
Yes. There's a Rashi. That's a Rashi in Shemais.
Argues with that also?
I imagine so. I don't know. It's not. I don't know for sure. You know how much. You know is he? Maybe I'm making. I'm saying it too broadly. I said that the Ibn Ezra seems to be denying the whole idea that the Shem and Farish could do Mifsim. Maybe he's just denying the idea that it could tell futures. I don't know. But yeah, I mean that's a Medrash. The Ibn Ezra is not so. You know, doesn't. Is not going to be so reluctant to. To not accept something from a medrash.
Was it allowed to be used on Shabbos?
That's a good question. I don't know.
If it lights up.
That's a very good question. Check and remember Ruby at
safe. Put the battery on.
Was it on Shabbos clock?
What?
You put on the Shabbos clock.
Was that used also for Saita?
No. That's a parashah Chumash. That's a parashah Chumash.
Was it warm?
Yeah.
It was warm, right?
Yeah. The Rashi on Hal Haragini Ata Oimer, Rashi said that he killed him in the shame of a Feirish. Rashi, if I'm not mistaken, is quoting that from a Medrash Tanchuma. It's not a Gemara. Anyway, so there are makaris in Chazal. There's a Gemara, Lamashal. The Gemara talks about. This is also not mamash shemois, but it says, Betzalel knew how to be mitzarif the oisiois shenivru behen shemayim va'aretz. Doesn't mention shemois, but it talks about siruf of oisiois. That almost expresses this idea, and that's a Gemara. It's brachas daf nun hey. There are strong makaris to the idea. The Ibn Ezra seems to be very resistant to the idea. At any rate, according to Rashi, that is the meaning of Hagishem Beis Yosef. Hagishem Beis Yosef has to do with abusing the supernatural powers of the Shem Hashem.
The Atzma Yosef were also found with the Shem
No. I don't think there was a Shem Hashem on that. Over there it says there was a task that said, Alei Shur. Alei Shur. Right?
Alei Shur?
Didn't
they bring it up with the show?
Yeah. It was brought up with some special
ICS. I thought the ICS were Alei Shur. That's not the Shem Hashem. I think so. So there is.
So you think that what the evidence is the only chalik on the powers of the Shem and not the fact that there are other Nissim?
I mean, the Ibn Ezra all the time says that he's not. He doesn't put so much emphasis on stories that are told in Midrash. Again, that's the Ibn Ezra. That's, you know, a little bit out of the mainstream in that way. I think we've talked about that before.
Nobody denied the fact that people went to Urim Tumim and
Right. No, that's the Furush and the Chumash, that they used the Urim Tumim to tell them Asidais. Yeah. Right.
So how does he find for that? So where did that come from?
So
the stones.
The truth is, Ibn Ezra does seem to have the Ibn Ezra has a long discussion describing what he thinks the Urim Tumim was about, and I can't really make heads or tails out of it, but it has to do with the Kekavim. That's his general derech in the Urim Tumim. I don't know.
So it's good anyway. That Ibn Ezra was before the Maharam in Prague. He wouldn't have believed the story. Right?
A lot of people don't believe
it. Okay, yeah.
Was the Choshen stolen?
Huh?
The Choshen was taken?
No.
You said the tzitz, somebody saw the tzitz.
Yeah, right.
The tzitz, yes, but not the Choshen.
Oh, was that taken by the Romans? I have no idea. I don't know.
You only saw the tzitz.
So Rashi says the Hagishem Vesiyasav means the 42-letter name, doing miracles with it. Now, according to that, it has no shaykhas to the Gemara that we're talking about, where the Gemara says that the tzitz had the yud kei lamala. There's another pshat, a second pshat in Hagishem Vesiyasav that has to do with the shem havaya versus the shem adnus. That you're supposed to, every time that you see Yud Kei Vav Kei in the Chumash, you don't pronounce it Yud Kei Vav Kei, you pronounce it Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. And that's another pshat in what it means. So what's the aver of Hayah Hashem Yisrael? If somebody with Chas V'Shalom would pronounce it straight, read it as if it was regular letters and the Kudais and read the word that's written there, so that would be the aver of Hayah Hashem Yisrael. And then it has a third pshat. Now, the truth is, in the Taz is not written so clearly. It's a little bit they're jumbled together, but it seems that these are three different possibilities. The third pshat, what I'm calling the third pshat in Taisvis, is that Hoya Hashem Yisiv means saying the letters of Hashem's name. Meaning, it's not about saying the name, but saying the letters. And that for some reason, yeah, this makes more sense in a sense, I mean, in terms of the lashon of the Mishnah, but Isiyasav, that the Mishnah seems to emphasize the Isiyasav. So it's not, I mean, according to that second pshat, you think it's just Hoyga Hashem. But Isiyasav, Taisa says, no, there's an Isser in saying the letters. And Taisa says that according to this pshat, it has nothing to do with the Shem Havaya being some kind of an off-limits name that we don't say. Because even the other names that we do say, you could say the name, obviously you don't say it's Tam Levatola, but if you come to it, you know, in a Pasuk or in a Bracha, you're allowed to say Hashem's name, but you're not allowed to spell it out. Spelling it out is worse than, say, you could say the word, but to mention the letters that spell the word, that's Aser. And so Taisa says that according to that pshat, even the Shem Ka would also have an Iser. You wouldn't be allowed to say the letter Yud and then mention it by name and then mention the name of the letter Hey, which is why when we say the two consecutively, we say Yud K. You can't pronounce the Hey, even though you're not saying the whole Yud K Vav K, but just Yud K, since that's also Hashem's name, right? V'anachnu nevarech ka. Right? We use that as, the Tanakh uses that, Mikrei Kodesh, use that as one of the names of Hashem. So you're not allowed to say the letters. Taisa says, Lafizeh hu adin l'shem adnos. You wouldn't be allowed to say, Taisa says, possibly, that you wouldn't be allowed to say the letters of the Shem Adnos either. You'd have to stop short before you say all four of them together. But the Yud Kei says for sure, not for sure, because it's three pshatim in Hagia Hashem Yisyezev, but according to this pshat in Hagia Hashem Yisyezev, that it means you're not allowed to mention the letters, so the same way you can't mention the letters of the Shem Havaya, you can't mention the letters of the other names either, including the name of Yud Kei. If that's the case, the Gemara just violated that. The Gemara says, yeah, you read the Gemara, and it says that it was Kasav Yud. And the Gemara writes the Hey after the Yud, Lamala, So isn't that a violation of Hayga Hashem Es Yosef? Serious Aveira. How could the Gemara write? And then Tosfos says, yeah, there's other Pshatim Hayga Hashem Es Yosef. According to those other Pshatim, it's not Shver. But Tosfos thinks that there's a good chance that this is the Pshat on Hayga Hashem Es Yosef, that you're not allowed to mention the letters of Hashem's name. So Frek Tosfos, this Gemara is violating that Isser. So it's very unclear in Tosfos who does Tosfos think is the offender in this Isser. Does Tosfos mean that the Gemara was written in a way that the reader of the Gemara will be over? Or does Tosfos mean that the writing itself of the Gemara is an Aveira? Meaning, when you sit down and write over this Gemara, on the page, it says, in front of us, it says Yud, and then it says Hey. So maybe Tosfos is asking, hey, somebody just wrote that, right? The Sefer wrote that, and he was over and Aveira by writing it. Or maybe Tosfos means that if it's written like that, so there's an expectation that when you're sitting and reading the Gemara, you're going to read the Yud followed by the Hey, and then you, the reader, will be over in the Aveira. So let's be a little bit into each of these. When you're reading a Gemara and you come to Hashem's name, what are you supposed to do with that? There are Gemaras that have Hashem's name. There's really two ways that this comes. There's a few ways that this happens. Usually, typically, it's either in a pasuk. I guess that's the most common example. The Gemara will have a pasuk, and the pasuk will include Hashem's name, and it's written out in the Gemara. Sometimes you also have brachas. The Gemara, for example, the Gemara in Shabbos says that when you're doing a milah, you say Baruch Atah Hashem Elikeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kidshanu V'Saseh V'Zanu Ala Milah. So when you're learning that Gemara, you read the bracha, and you're supposed to say Hashem's name, like you say all the other words on the page. You're learning a page of Gemara. Is that called bracha levatala? Is that a Shem Shemayim levatala? It's not a bracha levatala. But is it a Shem Shemayim levatala? Mm-hmm. So those are two scenarios, psukim, brachais, and you also, I think, have it sometimes in shvuos. Mm-hmm. Meaning, since you're reading a Gemara, and the Amoraim got very animated, and one of them will say, Ha'alikim, right? I'm saying Ha'alikim. Ha'alikim, and he'll say, no, he never said that, right? I think one example is, the Gemara says that Rav Salachu would be mistaber in the case of, one case, not another case, I don't remember now, what the context was. I think the Gemara about Maimed Shlashton, the Gemara says that it would make sense if it was Befonov, if it was Be'en, but not when it isn't. But Holy Kim! But Rav said it even in the other case. I think there's such a Gemara. But you have that in a few places, but the Gemara writes out Hashem Hashem. Right? So there's three different contexts. So the Magen Avraham says that whenever you come to such Gemaras, you're not supposed to read it. You don't read Hashem's name, Alekim, or the Shem Hashem, and the Bracha, and a Pasuk. You just, you read Gemara the same way you talk. Just like when you're talking to your friend and you want to refer to Hashem, you say Hashem. So in a Gemara also, whatever it says in the Gemara, you say Hashem. If it says the Shem Alekus, so you can say Alekinu, Alekim, but you don't say Hashem's name. When you're reading the Gemara, there's a Magen Avraham and some in Reish Tesvav. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin has a tshuva where he says that he thinks the Magen Avraham made up this new Isser, and it's not true, there's no basis for it. He said, I know that's not the way my father learned. By the way, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, that was the biggest source. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin's father was the Chacham Tzvi, and what he saw by his father carries tremendous weight. And he says, I think he says more than that, not just that that's not the way my father learned, my father once saw a melamed teaching and Gemara and saying Hashem, and he told him, what are you saying Hashem for? You know the name, say the name. So he says that Avadi, you're supposed to say Hashem's name when you're learning Gemara. And he brings a few rayas. One very interesting raya that he brings, there's the Gemara in Kiddush and Daf Lamed Beis, where it says that when a person is learning Torah, he's supposed to be Mishalish Sha'isav. He's supposed to divide his time in three. Shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishnah, shlish b'gemara. That it's supposed to be one third of the time on Tanakh, one third on Mishnayis, and one third on Gemara. So, if you've ever been inside of a yeshiva, you know that that's not exactly the curriculum that we follow. So that is based on a Chiddush Rabbeinu Tam. This goes back a long way in the times of the Balei Tesis. Also, that was not the curriculum. In France, the Balei Tesis, they sat and learned Gemara, just like we do in our yeshivas. They learned Gemara. That was the curriculum. And Rabbeinu Tam said that we're not violating this Gemara, we're fulfilling this Gemara because the Talmud Bavli is Bolul Min HaKoil. The Bavli has the Mishnayis there. And there's a Gemara on the Mishnayis, and it also brings lots of pesukim. Mm-hmm. You never go very far without finding a pasuk. Mm-hmm. So we're mekayim our limud of Mikra and Mishnah and Gemara just by learning the Talmud Bavli. So Rabbi Yaakov said, if we're mekayim our limud of Mikra by learning Talmud Bavli, then you got to do the Mikra for real. I mean, if you're reading pesukim, if you're being Maver Sedra, you're expected to say Hashem's name. If you're reading through Navi, you're expected to say Hashem's name. So if you're you're not learning Navi. You're saying, no, in my yeshiva, we don't have a Navi class. We just do Talmud Bavli. And that patters us from our Navi class. So then you have to learn it right. That means with Hashem's name. That's one of the rites Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings. Agabon Rabbi Yaakov Emden's shita is that when you read a Gemara and you come to Hashem's name, you're supposed to read it with Hashem's name. But the Magen Avraham says, no, you're not supposed to. And the Mishnah Berurah says that the Minhag HaOlam is to follow the Magen Avraham. If I'm not mistaken, that's where he puts it. Not that he necessarily is paskening that he's right, recommending it is wrong, but the Minhag HaOlam is like, I mean, because recommending, he brings other rites, he seems to build a strong argument, but the Mishnah Berurah says, but the Minhag HaOlam is like the Magen Avraham, that we don't say Hashem's name.
Is there a difference if it's a full pasuk or a partial pasuk?
I don't think so. I think Rabbi Yaakov would say that in both cases, you know, now that you mention it, there is a tshuva in the Igros Moshe about it, and I think in the Igros Moshe he makes this distinction between full psukim and partial psukim. I don't remember how he comes out or what the details are, but I know that he gets into a discussion when he's talking about this tshuva of Yaakov Emden, and he gets into a discussion about the psukim d'lo paskei Moshe Rabbeinu. So al kapanim, you have this machlokes. Hapaiskim. How do you say, what are you supposed to do when you come to Hashem's name in the Gemara? Now, where Tosfos asked that the Gemara that says Yud Kei Lamala is a Hayah Shem V'Siyasav. So if, thank you very much, if it's supposed to mean that the reader, Tosfos was concerned that the reader of the Shas will violate the Hayah Shem V'Siyasav, that doesn't make any sense according to the Magen Avraham. According to the Magen Avraham, a reader of a Shas never says Hashem's name. And on lots of pages of Gemara, there's a Shem Hashem, but the reader always knows to substitute Hashem for the word. So when he comes over here, the reader will also presumably know that, even though it says Yud, mm-hmm. and then it says Hey, but he'll say Yud Kei. Mm-hmm. Tezis Kash will be a good Kasha according to Rav Yaakov Emden. According to Rav Yaakov Emden, that typically we say everything. When you're learning Gemara, you assume that there's a hechsher on this sefer, that you're allowed to read all the words in the sefer. But over here, there's one that your mom is not allowed to say. It's a Hayah Hashem V'Siyasav, right? Even if it's, it's not about Talib, it's just under any circumstances, you're never allowed to say this word. So Tezis Kash is a good Kash according to Rav Yaakov Emden, but it's not a good Kash according to the Magen Avraham. By the way, I didn't mention, what was Tosfos' teretz? Again, Tosfos asked that the Gemara seems to be in violation of the Isser of Hayah Hashem V'Siyasav. Tosfos has a geshmak of teretz, that it's true that even the small name of Yud, the two-letter name of Yud followed by Hey, is subject to Hayah Hashem V'Siyasav, but that's only if you mean that name. But in the tzitz, it didn't say the name of Yud Kei, it said Yud Kei Vav Kei. Open a chumash. You'll see. It says Kodesh Lashem Yud Kei Vav Kei. So in the sense it said Yud Kei Vav Kei. When the Gemara says in the Talmud Bavli, you open the Gemara and it says that it was written on the top line Yud Kei. It really means Yud Kei dot dot dot. Right? Meaning it's alluding to the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, but it's writing Yud Kei for short. So Zok Taisvis, if it means the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei and it spells it out Yud Kei, that's not Hayah Hashem V'Siyasav. If you mean the Shem Yud Kei and you spell it out, that right, if you mean to be saying over that in the puzzle, Menachem Averich Ka, you find the name and you say the name and you with the letters, that's an Aveira. But to say those two letters as a reference to the Shem Havaya, that's not an Aveira. That's Tosfos' Teretz.
How about when you say Elohim Acherim? So
So it's not a shame.
Very good point. Right. That's fine. You're allowed to say Elohim Achirim. Not only that, but even, I mean, over there for sure, because it's referring to Avodah Zarah, but even in Psukim where the word is used to refer to a Beis Din, Ad Ha'alihim Yavoi Dvar Shnehem, that also you're allowed to say straight. You don't have to say Elikim. You're not supposed to say Elikim. That's the wrong way to read the pasuk, because it doesn't mean God. It means, even though Al Derech Drush, there's this idea that Elikim needs to have Vadas Kel, that a Beis Din has the Yata Deshmaya, but the word over there refers to the Beis Din. So there you could pronounce it with a hey. Okay, so this was the kasha and teres. Again, Taz's kasha was that it's a Hayyash Shem Vesya. So Taz's answer is that no, because it's a reference to the longer name, so it's not really a Hayyash Shem Vesya. But we were troubled. We wanted to know, what did Taz's mean when he said it's a problem of Hayyash Shem Vesya? So possibly he meant that the reader of the Shas is going to be Oyver, but L'chere, that's only a good kasha according to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, not according to the Magen Avraham. The other way to read the Gemara, the other way to explain Taz's kasha, what Taisa says that this is a problem of Hagia Shem Yosef, he may mean the writer of the Shas. That how did he's reading from, Taisa had a scroll in front of him.
How did he write it?
Some from Yid just wrote in this scroll that it was written Yud Kei Lamalam. Kei was, you know, spelled out as a hey. For Taisa says, hey, how is he allowed to write that? Now, so here there's a different debate among the Achrayim. There's a Tshuvah Rabbi Kveger. We've mentioned different parts of this Tshuvah over the years. It's one of the more well-known Tshuvahs of Rabbi Kveger. When Rabbi Kveger got married, so his uncle, Rabbi Wolf Eger, who had, he had a yeshiva where Rabbi Kveger, when he was younger, had studied and had learned in that yeshiva. But then afterwards he left. And at the time that he got married, so his uncle, Rabbi Wolf, said, we were so excited about your chasana, and we were so sorry to miss it, that we made a party over here on the night of your wedding to celebrate your wedding. And at our party, we were talking and learning, and we were talking in the sugya of Ksiva Kedibur. And I'm going to just, you know, to be mishtasheya with you in learning, I'm going to tell you over the whole discussion we had. And he writes the discussion they had about Ksiva Kedibur, whether when you write something as a equivalent to saying it, l'mashal nafkamin l'gabe shvua, l'gabe bracha, paspul l'gabe sfira so'imer. And then Rabbi Kveger writes back, first the beginning of the letter is very geschmack. He says, you know, I'm so touched that, you know, I really appreciate that you made such a big deal about me, and I, you know, and you don't owe it to me, I owe more to you. It's a very nice little paragraph there at the beginning. And then he says, I'll respond to, you know, I'll join the discussion. And he writes his thoughts about the Ksiva Kedibur responding to what his uncle said. In the middle of that letter, he writes that, I think that even though there is a possibility that Ksiva is Kedibur, but I'm sure that it's not automatic. It's only if the writer intends that it should be Kedibur. But if the writer doesn't want his Ksiva to be Kedibur, you could turn it off. He says, what's my riot to this Chiddush? Because otherwise, we would be in an impossible situation. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to write Svarim, Tefillin, and Mezuzos. So a Sefer sits down, he writes Shema Yisrael Hashem. How does he write Hashem? Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei. Now, he would never say that. He could say Hashem's name. Shema Yisrael, when you say in the puzzle, you could say Hashem, but you can't say the names of the letters. That's how you get Hashem, Vaisi, Yisav. But he writes them, Ksiva Kedibur. So how do you get away with that?
How do you write
Sefer Torah? Right, Sefer Torah, same thing. So Rabbi Kveger says it must be that even if you hold Ksiva Kedibur, meaning and theoretically you could make a shvua with Ksiva, but only if you mean for your Ksiva to be Kedibur. And the Sefer means for his Ksiva not to be Kedibur. That's where Rabbi Kveger writes over there. Then now there's a tshuva from the Avnei Nezer. A very... very strongly worded tshuva. He disagrees with this Rabbi Kveger, and he says that Hod Rabbi Kveger dekatnusehu. He says that he wrote this when he was young, because he wrote it bisman nisua parishenu, was at his first chasana, at the time of his first chasana. So, but it's not a good vart. So he thought that if you hold Ksiva Kedibur, you could, that would apply to the Isser of Hoyga Hashem Bais Yosef. He says, of course not. Hoyga Hashem Bais Yosef. The whole idea is, what's wrong with Hagia Hashem Vesiyaitza? Because by using your goof, by putting it into your goof and taking it out of your goof, you're making some kind of a bond between you and the Shem Hashem, which is not appropriate. You need to be misrachik, you know, to show deference and to sort of make yourself like an equal to put it into your goof. But it's pashut that this isser only applies if it's with the goof mamish, it's coming out of your throat. But you can't be over the isser Hagia Hashem Vesiyaitza through ksiva, even if you hold ksiva kedibur, like Abi Shmuas and like Abi Brachas and Sviras Aimer, that's all fine. But nobody would say that you could be over the isser of Hagia Hashem Vesiyaitza ayde ksiva. He says, so Irab Kibaker said you could. Yeah, he was a little boy when he said that. Dekat Nusehu. Now, it's interesting that, you know, he means to be saying that, of course, I don't really have the audacity to dismiss something that Rabbi Kibaker said. Rabbi Kibaker was, was bigger than me. I can't just say what something he said was silly. But this, you know, I wouldn't say it on a different verb, but this one I could say it on because when he said it, he was very young. Now, it's interesting. He says he was very young because you could see in the tshuva that he wrote at the time that he was getting married. The Avni Nezer got married when he was 13 years old.
Whoa.
Rabbi Kibaker didn't. Rabbi Kibaker got married at the ripe old age of 20. But I'm sure the Avni Nezer didn't spend his time reading biographies or Wikipedia articles about Rabbi Kibaker. So he didn't know when Rabbi Kibaker got married. But he knew he got married when he was 13. He thought back, well, at the time of my Sheva Brachas, I said some things that I wouldn't say later on. So he says about Rabbi Kibaker, yeah, he said it when he was little. But the Meister, Rabbi Kibaker was 20 years old. I don't know if you could say on something that Rabbi Kibaker said when he was 20 that, oh, the Katnusehu, we don't have to take it seriously.
How old was his wife?
I don't know. Good question. But she doesn't have to be a Gedolah. You can give the Kedushin to the father. I don't know how old his wife was. At any rate, we do have, you know, two Gedolah Achrayim that disagreed about whether you could have Ksiva Kedushin, whether you could be over this Hagia Hashem Vesiyaitza through Ksiva. If you make gold, you could. The Avnei Yisrael holds, you can't. So we said that when Tosis asked that this is a Hagia Hashem Vesiyaitza, he might mean Legabe the Kaisve Hashas. Wow. That can only make sense according to Rabbi Kibaker. It can't make sense according to the Avnei Nezer. So this second Pshat Tosis, you can't say according to the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer will have to learn Tosis the first way. The first Pshat of Tosis, you can't say according to the Magen Avraham. You can only say according to Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So it's okay. These are two unrelated Machlokes Acharinim, but each one is gonna rule out one of the two possible ways of learning this Kasha of Tosfos. Okay.
You could be Yotze saying spheres, so I'm going to just write it.